What's up, guys? Before we get going today, just wanted to remind you, the podcast brought to you by Skybox Sports Picks. Who is Skybox Sports Picks? Well, glad you asked. They're the world's best gambling handicapping website, the inventors of the Skybox Matrix Interval, an advanced modeling mechanism that has helped propel Skybox to the top of the handicapping industry, along with years of wisdom and experience on betting. These guys are legit. You need to check them out. I hope you took advantage of their U.S. Open package that's been live up on the site. There's still time. They've got daily picks, weekend picks, long shots. Think a little Mississippi flavor in there. I want to say the guys at Skybox maybe kind of knew Hayden Buckley was coming a little bit. I don't know. You'll have to go check it out for yourself. That's Tupelo native Hayden Buckley. Shot a first-round 2-under 69, one of just 25-ish players under par, I think. I didn't check towards the end. But anyway, their golf picks are up. All kinds of great stuff going on the site. They're going to have a package to fit your price range, I promise. They have week-long packages that are either all sports or sport-specific. You could do a month-long package in every sport, or you could do just a specific sport that you like. They're crushing NASCAR. The main two they've got going on NASCAR and golf right now. They've got some MLB stuff up on the site as well. I would just recommend going ahead and doing a full year pass for all the picks. You're going to make your money back and then some. I could promise you that. Football season is just around the corner, which is where these guys are going to kick it into gear. But right now, they're crushing it on NASCAR and golf. Got some baseball flavor in there as well, if that's your cup of tea. But go check them out, skyboxsportspicks.com. Go click packages and just kind of surf through the variety of packages, 10, 11, 12 on the site right now from what I'm seeing, that will fit your price range. I promise you that. That includes a daily pass if you just want to try them out for a day. If you use the promo code RIPPY, you get 20% off. Please use the promo code, because I know you people are buying the packages, but you're also, in addition to peeing away free money, you're also not letting them know that I sent you. So you might as well take the 20% off. It's free money. So check them out, skyboxsportspicks.com. Podcast also brought to you by LB's University Avenue across from Kroger. The man needs no introduction. He helped me out with the Mailbag Friday. That's the bulk of the pie today. Greg, the meat sharp Jones. Go check him out. LB's is absolutely the best place in Mississippi to get meat. If you're a subscriber to the Rippy Writes newsletter now, we just tweaked the deal again as effective this morning. If you're a subscriber to the rippywrites.substack.com newsletter, it's free. You get $15, 16-ounce prime strip for $15, and then a pack of frozen sausage for $5. How could you beat that? You go in, you get a New York strip, and you get a pack of sausage, and you spend him a $20 bill. I recommend going buy more stuff than that, but you get the point. In and out, that's a great start to the weekend. So, LB's University Avenue across from Kroger. We've got Greg on the show today in kind of a hybrid Mailbag Friday meat grill corner type of deal. So, anyway, the triumphant return of the People's Holiday. Mailbag Friday is back for the new listeners out there. If you don't know what the People's Holiday is, it is Mailbag Friday. It is a holiday I made up. But basically, you can be defiant to your boss. You can do anything you want on Mailbag Friday. Pants are optional. Hopefully, you have a cold beverage somewhere listening to this podcast. Enjoy the People's Holiday. We're going to start off at the top, though. I have some solo thoughts on the whole Mike Bianco search, as well as a little bit of golf. It's not necessarily thoughts on the search in terms of something you haven't heard before, information-wise. But I do think there's an angle or two that people are missing in this that I want to get to. So I got a couple solo thoughts at the top, and then we'll get into Mailbag Friday. Let's go.
Rippy Writes with Brian Scott Rippy.
Transcript can be obtained by drinking a fifth of bourbon, ramming your head through some drywall, and then writing down every thought you have.
Welcome in. I appreciate everyone joining us for another edition of Mailbag Friday, the People's Holiday. We will get to Greg Jones in just a minute. But one thing I wanted to get to off the top, and I didn't really have this planned. I originally just had intended for this to be a Mailbag Friday episode, but after we finished recording, I was thinking about some different things, and I wanted to get a couple solo thoughts off the top. I don't really do solo podcasting very much, so if this sucks, please just fast forward through. If it doesn't suck, would appreciate the feedback. So anyway, one thought I had on this Mike Bianco situation, because judging by the message board I am now partially employed by, that is all anyone wants to hear and anyone wants to talk about. Understandably so. It's the dead season. Football fall camp hasn't started yet, even though it's kind of a farce that we call it fall camp. And Mike Bianco's been there for 21 years, and this was kind of the storyline for the last month-ish, is his future, how the postseason would affect it, and now the LSU job coming in to the fray, how that's changed things. So what do we know about this situation in totality? Very little. Without giving away the reporting that Chase Parham and Neil McCready have done, if you want that scoop, I would encourage you to go sign up for rebelgrove.com. It's the best $9.99 you'll spend. I think it's $9.99. If it's not $9.99, then I just lied. But anyway, you get the point. Go subscribe. It's well worth the money, and the information is amazing. But what do we know that's concrete? We don't really know a whole hell of a lot. We know that Keith Carter and Mike Bianco met on Wednesday for their normal end-of-the-year meetings. I don't really know what was discussed. There's a couple, little bit of reporting, a little bit of speculation out there. Don't want to step on Chase's toes, like I mentioned. But I don't think the LSU gig was a huge topic of conversation, and if at all, in their meeting. So Mike Bianco and Keith Carter have met. According to the Ole Miss Spirit, Mike Bianco is now on a previously planned vacation to the beach. I know that caused some stir earlier in the week about people, the way that was phrased and people's reading comprehension. Mike Bianco did not plan a vacation the week of Omaha. They own a house. They go at the end of the season every year. He told me that as early as 2016 when I did a story on him and Drew. Nothing new out of the ordinary. So Mike Bianco presumably is in Florida after meeting with his boss after the season ended. This whole LSU thing, you've had reporting on the LSU side, Glenn Gilbo of USA Today. I don't think he works for a specific newspaper down there, just the USA Today network, reported earlier in the week that, one, he thought Mike Bianco, I think, would be hired in the next 24 to 36 hours, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think that necessarily happened. And then he also reported that Bianco and ECU head coach Cliff Godwin would be due into Baton Rouge for in-person interviews. To my knowledge, that has not happened yet. That doesn't mean it won't happen. That doesn't mean Glenn Gilbo is wrong. The guy's been around the block a time or two. But I think he's credible. I'm not questioning that. But I did have my skepticism as to whether Mike would actually show up to a in-person interview in Baton Rouge without already having the job in hand. Because if you show up down there and expect your job to be waiting on you, at least in any recognizable capacity that you left it on when you come back, I think is naive. Self-awareness is not always Mike Bianco's strong suit, but I do think he's a smart guy. He's smarter than that, right? He has to know that. So I have my doubts that he ever shows up for an in-person interview in Baton Rouge. I just do. I don't think it's necessary. I think they know what they're getting, and I think the only way they would have an in-person interview would just be for formality's sake and to get him to sign the contract, if you want me to be completely honest. So that being said, Mike Bianco presumably has not interviewed with LSU in person. I would guess at this point he's had some sort of contact with LSU. I don't know in what capacity. I feel pretty comfortable saying I don't think there's been any sort of formal job offer, although, you know, I got asked that question a couple of times this week. Well, has he been offered the job? Well, what do you consider that? Like, have they officially said, "Hi, Mike, here's our contract, please sign it"? No, but have they made it abundant? Has LSU side probably made it abundantly clear that he's their number one 1A, 1B target, and that if he wanted the job, he could have it? Yes, I think that's probably fairly obvious at this point. And I don't want to get in too much further into, you know, what's actually happened or the timeline for this, because I don't know. I'm not a reporter anymore. Chase is way, 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 way better sourced than I am on any of this. So is Neil. They've been around it a long time. They're very good at what they do. I just want to hit this one angle that I think is lost in all of this, because a lot of questions I've gotten this week are, when's this going to happen? If he was already going to be the head coach, why wouldn't he have already accepted the job by now and this be over with? What's the holdup? What's happening? Well, I think there's been a little bit of a rush to assume that LSU 100% zeroed in on Mike and this was the only person that they wanted and they just wanted to get it done. I think there's a decent chance that LSU AD, Scott Woodward, wants to take a swing at Tony Vitello, who is still in Omaha. I think that's a long shot. I don't know. Maybe he ends up giving up on that, given the amount of time he'd have to wait to make like an official run at him. But I do think that's certainly a possibility. I also think anytime you have chaos, which that is an apt term to describe the LSU situation, is chaos. You have split factions and split power brokers on who they want to be the coach. Obviously, Skip Berkman and some of the older crowd certainly is lobbying for Mike Bianco. Skip Berkman definitely has cachet in the LSU athletic department. He is the godfather of college baseball coaching. He is a legend at LSU. He is certainly going to have pull, and he wants his guy in there. Now, Scott Woodward, I don't know what he's thinking. Does he favor Cliff Godwin? You would think if he favored Mike Bianco in its totality, then what's the argument to be had here? Just offer the man the job and see if he takes it. But that would lead me to believe that maybe he favors someone else. Be that as it may, that's not really the point. I'm just articulating, I guess, that every time you have split factions and kind of a power struggle, which can be exaggerated at times, but for the lack of a better phrase, let's just go with power struggle, it's going to lead to dysfunction. It's going to lead to a lack of transparency. And really, more than anything else, it will lead to a lack of uniformity in decision making and how smooth the process goes. So I think that's part of it. And then I think the other hang up is this. I wrote all week in the newsletter, sign up for rippywrites.substack.com, that it makes all the sense in the world for Mike Bianco to go to LSU, right? He's had one Omaha appearance in 21 years at Ole Miss. It's growing stale rapidly. If you're one of those people that doesn't want to admit that it's completely stale yet, okay, fine. It's getting to that point, right? I mean, he's gotten in the back-to-back supers. He's gotten them a game away from Omaha 2 years in a row, but continues to fall short. They're now 1-6 in supers, 1-5 in game threes to get them to Omaha. That's a victim of your own expectations. I get the argument that it's grown stale. So, with that being said, you could make an argument he's reached a ceiling at Ole Miss. You could also make an argument against it, because if he wins two more of those game threes, then we're probably not having this conversation, right? It's like, what is the ceiling? I think he's maxed out his potential at Ole Miss in terms of getting a very highly rated recruiting class, you know, every 3 years, filling in the gaps the other two because of the lack of scholarships they have compared to someone else. They're working with the basic 11.7 and having a really good competitive baseball team most every year. I think that in terms of a ceiling he's reached. Could he make it to Omaha because he's gotten them to the doorstep more times? Absolutely. So it depends on what you define as ceiling. But I do think he's reached kind of a program status threshold. I don't think Ole Miss will ever get under Mike Bianco beyond a top 20 program. He's paid like a top six head coach. They're a top 20 program. They're relevant every year. That's a hell of a place to be. So I think he's plateaued in that sense. If he goes to LSU, he'll get a fresh restart. He will get a pay raise. He will get to go back to his alma mater to coach. And he will get a five-year reset at minimum. On the flip side, if he returns to Ole Miss, he's essentially gambling on himself to make it to Omaha in 2022, right? Is there a world where Ole Miss gets to another game three of a super in 2022 and they don't can him because you can't can a guy for getting a game away from Omaha? Sure, I think so. But I think next year has to go really well or things could get really dicey. So it's either pay raise, alma mater, go where your wife's from, and a five-year reset, or gamble on yourself to get to Omaha while having to replace major power arms in 2022 and risk leaving being without a job this time next year. Now you say, Mike Bianco would get a job as soon as he was fired at Ole Miss. Absolutely he would. No contesting that. Guess what? It wouldn't be LSU, and it wouldn't be as good of a quality. So if you're going to leap for another job and kind of reset your career, now is the time to do it. It seems to make every logical sense to take this job. I can't even really think of a better counterargument or a counterargument, period, to come back other than that it's his program. He thinks they can get to Omaha next year, and if he can do that, he can kind of retire here, basically, as much as some people don't want to hear that. That's really the only counterargument I can come up with. But in conclusion, my point in all of this, as I get texts this week about why is this taking so long, that's going to happen, is this seems cut and dry, right? This seems simplistic. Sure, it makes sense. I can tell you from being around Mike Bianco for 6 years, it is a frustratingly hard to get inside his headspace. He thinks about things differently. He thinks about baseball things differently. I think in some aspects, he thinks about life and the world and everything else differently. It doesn't always make sense. It doesn't make sense to me a lot of the times, but he can never be accused of it not being well thought out. So you're wondering why he's staying silent on this, why he's seemingly not letting anyone in on his thinking the way it hasn't leaked out in the media. And no one seems to know what his thinking is. That seems to be the whole hang up in the lack of transparency in all of this. I would just caution you that, yes, it seems like every sign points him to LSU. I guess I'd probably still lean that way because at the end of the day, I'm going to side with conventional wisdom. But I will tell you that he does not always think about things the same way as conventional people do. He does not think about things in conventional ways. It sometimes shows up in his pitching decisions and his game management, and it frustrates people and it makes them mad. But he certainly has a reason every time he's asked about one of his decisions that doesn't work out. It may not make a ton of sense to you, but there is a well thought out reason. There is no just, oops, you know, I'm covering my ass because it was an oversight type of thing. He always has a reason for it. Whether that's a one that's coherent, whether that's one that's logical to other people, it is thought out. He can never be accused of it not being thought out. So I guess in closing, I don't even really know the point I'm trying to make other than the fact that what seems to make sense may not make sense to the man who holds all the cards right now. Because I can promise you in 6 years of trying to get in his headspace and, you know, a lot of times getting snapped at for asking questions that seem obvious and aren't obvious to him, It is incredibly difficult to read what that guy's thinking. It is. He doesn't talk to a lot of people. He doesn't really kind of tip his hand a lot. It is difficult to get in Mike Bianco's headspace, and I think that is something that is lost in all of this, because it's going to seem miraculous to some people if he shows back up in an Ole Miss uniform next year. And while on the surface that would be, wow, how in the world did this happen, it wouldn't stun me, because nothing stuns me with that guy, because I never know what the hell he's actually thinking. Anyway, that's something I just wanted to add. I have no idea if that adds any sort of nuance or helps with the conversation at all or makes any sense, but that's something I'd been thinking about the last couple of days, having spent a decent bit of time around Mike Bianco through the years. Anyway, that's my thoughts. That was the solo bit. Let's get to Mailbag Friday with Greg the Meat Sharp Jones. You're going to hear me do another intro to this podcast. Just please ignore that. I just didn't think this out very well and wanted to give some thoughts off the top. So anyway, here's the second intro to the podcast. What's up? Happy Friday to everyone. I am Brian Scott Rippey. On the other end of the line is Greg the Meat Sharp Jones. This is not another edition of Grill Corner per se. This is Mailbag Friday, the triumphant return of the people's holiday after baseball season kind of threw a loop in Mailbag Friday. But it's good to be back. Greg's going to hit Greg and I will hit some questions. Appreciate the help this morning. What's up, dude?
Oh, man, it's always a pleasure getting on the podcast with you and answering all the random questions. But yeah, it's always a good time to get on the pod with you.
Yeah, we haven't had a Mailbag Friday in quite a while, like I was saying, till, you know, the end of the baseball season when they start doing Thursday, Saturdays, and then even just normal Friday podcasts when we used to, like, we'd preview the series and all that. The people's holiday got pushed to the wayside, but it will not die in vain. So we've got a bunch of kind of a random assortment of questions to get to today. But before we get to that, what's happening at the store?
Oh, man, just, you know, it's Father's Day weekend, so expecting to be pretty busy and have the store stocked up, ready to go. And, yeah, just another weekend, but it's Father's Day weekend, so it should be pretty busy.
Do you guys do gift cards? I feel like that would be the ultimate dad gift, is just to get your dad a gift card to a meat shop.
Yes, we definitely do gift cards. And, you know, whenever you're looking to purchase a gift card, just always call the store and we'll get you set up and we can put his name on it to where anybody can come and pick it up. So, yeah, that's a definite yes for sure.
Take that as a hint if you're out there and you haven't done your Father's Day shopping yet. That probably won't fly for my father because I'm not sure he knows how to turn on a grill. So, but if your dad is into grilling, there's no better way to go about it than to get him a gift card to LB's. He will walk in there like a kid in a candy store. Anything crazy happening menu-wise at the store that you want to plug, or just anything out of the ordinary?
Well, we need to redo the Rippey Wright special because inflation has set in and beef prices are through the roof. So going to have a new special for the Rippey Wright special this week also.
Perfect. Is that actually true? Are there meat prices through the roof?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's actually my heart skipped a beat when I looked at my invoice the other day. So, inflation is real.
What does that stem from? Is there some sort of shortage? Because I asked that just because the industry I work in now, restaurants are having a gigantic cooking oil shortage, and that's in turn affecting us on the back end. Is there anything affecting this in particular? Is this like
commodity prices are up, you know, wheat prices are up, you know, bean prices are up. I think beef is over $1 on the hoof. So, it's pretty wild. I was expecting it to, you know, kind of inflate a little bit, but it's almost kind of near say blown up.
Wow. So that was Wall Street Corner. Get you a little stock advice. Commodities are up. I don't really know what that means. We're not stock advisors. But that's interesting. I guess as the world kind of goes back to normal, some of this other stuff is still just catching up. So let's just dive right into the questions. Let's see how many we had. I had a couple come through DMs, text, make sure they're all in the right place. What better way to start than a grilling question? So right up your alley, I'm going to lob you up a center cut fastball to start. What is your preferred fat content in ground beef for burgers? Also, grilled burger. We'll start with the first one. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, You know, I like a lot of – I like a good amount of fat in my burger. There's – my favorite burger that we do is the Smoky Bacon Burger. It's our Wagyu Eye of the Round, which whenever you go and go to the grocery store and it says 90-10 or 80-20, that's an average. Our ground beef is a true 90-10, so we use a Wagyu Eye of the Round. So the content of the Eye of the Round is actually a true 90 red meat, 10% of fat. So that's a true 90-10. The Smoky Bacon Burger is our Wagyu Eye of the Round grounded up, and then we smoke some bacon, and then we grind up the bacon into the burger. So it's kind of like a double smoked bacon burger. So it's pretty good. But yeah, your basic, it just depends on what you want. If you like a real good fatty burger, I would probably go like, I don't know, 85-15. But you really want, if you really want 90-10, because it's I like a little leaner, but it's just a matter of preference, honestly. But 85-15 to 90-10 is always a good solid number.
His second question was grilled burgers or skillet burgers.
Man, that's a tough question because, you know, both of them are awesome in flavor. The skillet burger is almost kind of like, kind of like a flat top burger. What they do at Handy Andy, you know, they kind of like they have a flat top to where it's just a constant sear on each side and a constant temperature. With the grill burger, you know, you get that grill flavor and that charcoal flavor and kind of get a good char on it. So, it's just a matter of preference on that also, but, man, you can't go wrong with either way, but, I like the skillet burger, just because I like cooking my beef in the grease that it's been hanging out in.
Which one's quicker? I imagine the skillet's quicker.
Yes. I mean, you know, you've got to get the grill going and everything like that. And, it depends on if you've got a gas grill. I mean, of course a gas grill, you can have that up and going in probably, you know, 5 minutes. But charcoal, you know, you got to get the charcoal hot, got to get the charcoal temperature right. But skillet burger is going to be the quickest.
Okay. So did you give a preference there, or did you just kind of highlight the plus and
minus? Yeah, I mean, you know,
it's either or. And I don't know. Yeah, you shouldn't take my word. Or.
I mean, I like that skillet burger just because it's real easy. It's but, you know, and you get to, you know, it gets to cook and it's grease. I like a good greasy, you know, burger.
Fair enough. There's no restaurants at all that would do skillet burgers, right? You couldn't just make them enough in mass, or is that?
No, I mean, skillet burger is basically like kind of like a flat top, you know, okay. Grilling on a flat top. So like, your places like, I know Handy Andy's has a flat top, so that's always a good solid go-to. But most restaurants have a flat top and kind of like a grill set up inside the restaurant. So you can go either or, but yeah, I would much rather do that skillet burger.
Fair enough. Let's see. What's the next one we have here? This will be a common theme today. We're going to flip back and forth from meats and Ole Miss baseball head coaching searches. So talk about flipping burger patties. We'll be flipping back and forth to this, I imagine, a couple of times throughout. J.A. Berry 5 asks, is it fair to say Mike leads Ole Miss to Omaha in back-to-back years if the pandemic doesn't happen and Gunner doesn't have the injury? Seems like if two uncontrollable instances don't happen, more fans would want to keep Mike around, especially since he is coaching better in recent years. Okay, a lot to unpack there. Mike, the short answer is no. I don't think it would be necessarily fair to say Mike goes to Omaha in back-to-back years. I think there's probably a pretty good chance where he kicks down the door in one of the two. And, you know, maybe that's more you lean towards the one with the less variable and the unknown. Because as awesome as Gunnar Hoglund was this year until he got hurt, I honest to God, after watching Doug struggle the way he did to get outs against that Arizona lineup, and I say that, not air quotes, but I say that and preface it by saying Doug was still good, right? Like, I mean, every single time that kid went out there, he allowed two runs and somehow get you to the sixth inning. But it's the idea of watching him, you know, need 56 pitches to collect five outs or whatever it was through two innings, and I think he got to six outs actually in 54. So he was at 50 pitches, I think, trying to get his sixth out. You get what I'm getting at. Seeing him just struggle and labor that much just to get outs against that lineup doesn't necessarily lead me to feel comfortable saying that if Ole Miss had Gunnar Hoglund, they would have won two out of three against Arizona. I just think that Arizona lineup's one of the best you've seen in college baseball in the last 3 to 4 years. And you know, even if Ole Miss was fully healthy, if you went this all around and Tim Elko had two healthy ACLs and Ole Miss had Max Chofi in addition to Gunnar Hoglund, I'm honestly not sure that I'd feel completely comfortable saying they went to Omaha after getting through the Arizona Super. Now, the flip side of this is Ole Miss somehow a national seed if Gunnar doesn't go down? Maybe, but I seriously doubt it. Maybe it gets you one more win in Hoover and you get into the conversation. But if you'll remember, Gunnar went down after the Mississippi State Sunday debacle. And Gunnar went down after the Texas A&M debacle. And in my mind, when you're looking at Ole Miss's national seed case, those were the two losses that really crushed them, that kept them from being 20-10. And instead, they were 18-12 like they finished. Those were the two losses that kept them from becoming a national seed in my mind. Do they maybe sweep Georgia with it? Maybe. I don't think the result is necessarily different. I can't see them sweeping Vanderbilt just because Jack Leiter pitching. Maybe Doug Jack Leiter, that gets a little weird. I'm not sure. But I just don't feel comfortable saying that. And so I don't know if they get to it this year. I say last year they'd have a good shot just because that team was playing so well. But Mike's teams always play well in March. Thoughts? I threw a lot at you.
I think that the team maxed out potential as much as they did, you know, with the injuries and everything like that. Everybody was asking me when they came in the store, like, you know, what are our chances against Arizona? I'm like, look, you know, Arizona is a 5 seed for a reason, you know, and they, you know, got the number one offense. And I think it's kind of funny how, you know, Ole Miss goes through every tough side of the region and every tough team through the Super Regionals. I wonder if Cohen has anything to do with that on the committee with that situation. But that's another angle of it. But, yeah, man, you know, if we could get to game three, you know, you throw the kitchen sink at them and, you know, just hope for the best. But, you know, I think the team this year, you know, maxed out as their potential with the injuries and everything like that. And, you know, I know it's another game short of Omaha, and it seems like it's a broken record with Ole Miss baseball. But, man, you know, it's tough to get to Omaha. It's not easy. You know, you have to win two games against a team that's really going to be pretty good and matched up in the Super Regionals, regardless of the team higher gets knocked out, you know, in the regional before the Super Regionals. So, I think the COVID short season is probably just, you know, chalk that up to being an Ole Miss fan. You know, it's just typical that something like that would happen and Ole Miss would be on a 19-game winning streak. I think the COVID team would make it. They were playing loose. They were having fun. You could tell that there was something going on with that team and that was a little bit different from previous Mike Bianco teams, but man, you know, it's baseball. It's round ball, round bat, and anything can happen. So, with that being said, I think that the team this year maxed out. They, you know, one game short, and they lost to a good Arizona team. Credit that Arizona team because they can hit the ball, and every time we tried to get them out, then you know they would get a hit. So. It's tough being an Ole Miss fan. That's how I kind of chalk it up to.
I think what you said at the beginning and the end there is absolutely correct in that Ole Miss did max out its potential, I would say not only with this team, but its last team as well, the 19 team, not 20, obviously, with the season being shortened. And that's kind of the odd part about this is there's plenty of gripes to have with Mike Bianco. I certainly get it. But the kind of odd part about it is, you know, after a few down years-ish, if you want to call it that, after the Omaha run, like the 15 team wasn't that good. 16 team hosted and was borderline national seed, but that team was not that talented. 17, they struggled. You get what I'm saying? He's back to where they're hosting regional and they're hosting super regional, not hosting super regional, excuse me, making super regionals on a regular basis. And that 2018 team would have hosted a super. So he's got the program back to that point, which I think is the best gauge of kind of a a really good and stable baseball program. But and like the other side, like, or kind of adding on to that is, like, they did max out their team the last 2 years. Arizona was just better than Ole Miss as they were currently constructed by the end of the year. And in 19, Arkansas was just a much better team. Not much better. Arkansas was a better team than Ole Miss. Their offense was better, and they had one more arm. And it's weird because you have to factor in Mike Bianco's whole history in the postseason. I perfectly understand why people don't want to hear, well, they just weren't good enough, you know, 21 years in with only one trip to Omaha. I do think the 2020 team is probably one of the greatest what-ifs of Mike Bianco's time, if that's over this year, if that's over in 5 years. I don't really know. Well, I'm sure we'll get to that in a second. I just don't know, because this team I thought was a slam-dunk national seed when fully healthy. And, you know, a lot of the things they did to kind of preclude themselves from being a national seed were with Gunnar Hoglund, and it was the same pitching rotation and arguably a little – oh, it's about the same bullpen depth, maybe a little less. The 2020 team probably had more, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And maybe the Servideo and the Keenan angle gives you a couple more bats, but the bats weren't Ole Miss's problem during the regular season. They had Hayden Leatherwood and TJ McCants at 365 in the SEC. Like, their offense statistically almost – not almost. It did get better in the 3 weeks after Elko went down. It stunk at the end of the year, and maybe that catalyzes them having the Servideo and the Keenan part of it. So, while I think – they're probably a national seed and they get to Omaha last year. So many other things have happened throughout these last couple of seasons that it's too uncertain to know. So I guess we'll never know. It's a good question that he asked because it really makes you think. I think there's a good chance, but is it fair to say he gets there in back-to-back years? I guess to culminate that, I would lean no, but I think there's a good shot.
Yeah, I mean, Arizona's a good club, man. And honestly, I think – I think they're, you know, almost kind of the favorite to win this thing. I mean, I know they got to go against either Light or a Rocker, but I mean, those bats do not seem to be afraid of anybody throwing the ball, for sure.
Well, it's that and the fact that, like, even if they aren't on Rocker per se and knocking him across the yard, the fact that they go through 8 and 9 pitch at bats almost regularly and spike opposing pitchers' pitch counts, Rocker is such an aggressive pitcher in that he goes after you every single pitch, which kind of like Doug is. Like, they don't waste a ton of pitches outside of kind of the obvious ones. I wonder how Rocker handles that, because you could see, you know, Doug's pretty patient to some degree, and you could even see him get frustrated at times. Like, you know, there's that kind of, not viral, but the iconic screen grab where he's kind of looking at the guy from Arizona after like that 10 pitch at bat. He's like, please hit it fair, like kind of joking.
Hit it on the ground, please.
Yeah, I wonder how Rocker handles that, because that's a frustrating offense. I'd probably still give the nod to Vanderbilt slightly, but it wouldn't stun me if Arizona grinded out like a 7-2 win just because they made Rocker throw 110 pitches in 5 innings.
And that's what you've got to do with you know, good pitchers like a Rocker or a Leiter or an Akazi. You know, you got to get them out of their game. You got to, foul off pitches where they, you know, they the pitcher thinks that, you know, that's a get-out pitch, but it's really a foul ball. You know, that really frustrates – any pitcher in any situation.
We talked about a lot on this podcast throughout Doug's time at Ole Miss is like he's never looked overwhelmed. I didn't think he necessarily looked overwhelmed against Arizona, but he looks more stressed than he'd ever been. And so Arizona took Doug to a place that I don't think anyone has ever seen Doug be at since he's at Ole Miss. I don't think "be at" is perfect English, but bear with me here. He was as taxed physically and mentally as I've seen him on a mound against Ole Miss, and he didn't even pitch poorly. It's just a credit to those guys. So, anyway, I guess to kind of wrap up that question, Arizona, Vanderbilt, I'm going to have to check what time that is. That might be must-see television. That will be fascinating. So,
yeah, that should be a really good game. And another thing to add to the Bianco thing, I mean, like, Ole Miss is going to be competitive every year. We're going to have a really good recruiting class. You know, the only thing that happens sometimes with Bianco's recruiting class is two to three guys actually get drafted and never come to Ole Miss. So, I mean, you know, like, that's a big deal sometimes whenever you miss out on, you know, one or two players that are actually, you know, game changers for your program.
No doubt. And we're staying on this theme. I'm sure we'll get back to meets in a couple questions. But someone said – oh, no, this was not a question. This man was just putting in his 2 cents.
The Stephen Head comment?
Yeah, I say screw offering it to Dan and Cliff if Bianco leaves. I want Stephen Head. Keith Carter knows who he is. I'll just offer a short thing and let you get into this story because it sounds like you got a pretty interesting one. Stephen Head, probably not a candidate, given that he's an area scout for the Dodgers, and that would be quite the leap. And Ole Miss is going to hire someone with head coaching experience. So,
I mean, you know, maybe bring him back to, as a, you know, a hitting coach or something like that. But, yeah, I mean, Stephen Head's a, you know, a, is it three-time All-American? Is he three-time?
I believe so, yes.
And I went to MRA, and he went to Hillcrest, and I've seen – Stephen Head hit that fire department probably three or four times in watching Hillcrest play baseball against MRA. So, excellent player. He's a good man too, and he would be a great candidate. But I just don't. I mean, he's just going to have to need some coaching experience for him to be the head coach at Ole Miss for me.
Oh, so y'all are I guess y'all are about the same age. When I read your tweet responding to that guy, I thought you were, when you were down in Jackson, you may have played in some sort of like beer league softball, and Stephen Head was just terrorizing the.
Hillcrest actually made CNN like play of the day or something like that. I think they hit two grand slams in one inning off of us at MRA. So, but yeah, Stephen Head was one of them, and I don't know. Have you ever seen the Hillcrest baseball track?
It has been quite a while, but I'm very familiar with the general kind of
there's a fire department, like probably, I would say probably maybe 500 feet away from home plate, and he's literally bounced it off the fire department a couple of times, I've seen. So, yeah, dude was a monster.
He was an absolute monster. That's probably a great way to sum that up. Back to the meat, flip the burger patty over. What is his opinion of beef tallow trend when wrapping a brisket?
Well, beef tallow is going to be fat. So, I imagine putting any sort of tallow on a smoked meat is going to give it a lot of flavor. You're actually not going to eat the tallow. You're just going to have a flavor rush with the tallow. But, you know, on briskets and stuff like that, just low and slow, and just trust your meat thermometer on stuff like that.
Yeah, sorry, I left out an important article there in terms of a word. I left out the. It is, what is his opinion on the beef tallow trend? So that sounds like that's a newfound trend. Is that what he's getting at?
I'm kind of slow on trends, so I probably need to get on my Googling and trending right now as far as beef, but I didn't know that beef tallow was trending right now. But beef tallow is just a solid piece of fat that's just, you know, it's really good in like beans and stuff to give it, you know, give beans flavor and stuff like that. But I'll have to get on the Google and check out trending beef tallow fat.
Okay, so. You explained it a second ago, but walk me through it one more time. The advantage of it is just flavor.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's flavor. It's just really solid fat. Like there's no red meat involved at all. It's solid fat. So, you know, you could just a lot of people cut it up and throw it in beans, you know, for flavor and stuff like that. But I can imagine if he was saying wrap tallow in with a brisket, he's probably just, you know, trying to get some extra flavor in that and some extra natural beef flavor with the brisket.
Can you do that with anything else? Like, do you do the whole beef tallow for flavor thing on other cuts of meat, or is brisket?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people render, you know, fat down. I've got a customer that renders duck fat down, and she actually cooks with the duck fat. So it's almost kind of like similar to that, cooking with fat.
Let's see. Oh, here's one that we can actually both talk about with somewhat expertise. Best craft beer you've ever had.
Whew, man. I've drank many a craft beers in my time. There's a place called Zia's in New Orleans that has their own brewery, and they did a habanero beer. It was pretty spicy. I like a good spicy beer, but I like that. I like more coffee. I like, you know, coffee brews and stouts like that. That, what is it? The Get Down to Get Down coffee stout. I like a good coffee stout. That's where I like to go on the craft beers. IPAs are good. They're sometimes a little too hoppy for me, but I like stouts and a good pilsner.
I like that. My favorite beer of all time, I'm sure I've told this on the podcast before, is the Mad Tree Psychopathy IPA. So Mad Tree is a local brewery in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Psychopathy is an IPA, but it's not like a traditional one like you mentioned. Because I'm kind of the same thing. If it's overly hoppy, I don't necessarily always love it, although I do like a decent amount of IPAs in terms of like variety. But this one is called Psychopathy. And it's not overly hoppy. I can't even really describe the flavor. It's kind of hard. But it's my favorite beer on earth. I don't really, like, it's one of those things. I don't really ever have beer where I'm, like, most of the time I'm like, oh, yeah, that's good. I'd probably drink another one of those. I drank one of those. It was like, shit, where can I buy 12 of these? And so that became my favorite beer through the summer. I couldn't get it back in Mississippi. You apparently can't ship alcohol back to Mississippi. And then I'm going to do it out here. I just hadn't gotten around to it. You could ship him to Texas, but I think you have to ship like 200 at a time or something.
Wouldn't that be casual? You know, just 200 beers showing up at your doorstep.
Yeah, my neighbors would be like, "Damn, this kid parties. We need to get in with him," or they might try to steal the beer. But the that's probably one of my favorite, probably my favorite beer of all time. I actually, when I was an intern at the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, I was a features writer at that newspaper and lived in Little Rock for a summer. I followed around the guy named John the Beer Snob. I still actually get his newsletter. I don't know what happened to the gentleman, but he was like supposedly this like regionally renowned beer expert. And so I kind of I shadowed him for like a week and did like a profile story on him. He says that beer, this always stuck with me, that beer is best tasted around room temperature or very slightly chilled. He said the reason that light beer, which he called the fizzy stuff, is so cold is because it tastes like shit and it's so cold it freezes your taste buds. You don't notice as much, but true beer drinkers want to drink beer that's slightly chilled or around room temperature. Now, is this guy maybe just being a gigantic granola crunch bar and saying he knows more about beer than anyone else on earth? Absolutely. I just thought it was an interesting thought.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think over in Ireland, they drink Guinness room temperature.
Yes, that's exactly what they do, because he actually brought that up.
Man, you know, we just learned something new every day on the podcast. That's why you got to listen.
Yeah, so with that being said, like if I do order this case of Mad Tree, I'm probably sticking those bad boys in the fridge. I'm probably not John the Beer Snobbing it and trying to impress my friends by saying, no, I prefer this room temperature because I'd probably take 5 sips and yak. So I'm probably putting them in the fridge. I'm not on that level yet. I could see how the whole like Guinness, and you mentioned some of those stouts. Like, could you see how some of those stouts taste okay at room temperature? Whereas your typical IPA at room temperature is probably going to taste like ass.
Yeah, I mean, like, what is it? The bitter beer face? Wasn't that a commercial back in the day? The bitter beer face where you take a swig of beer and it would be, you know, I think that was a Miller Lite commercial, maybe. The bitter beer face.
Yeah, that's quite the blast from the past. Good reference there. So, yeah, and then the other one I'll concede to you that you can – one of, you know, actually my old radio colleague Brian Haydad texted me about this last night. Big fan of yours, Greg, and LB's. I turned him on to Tiny Bomb – or Wiseacre's Tiny Bomb, the Memphis –
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah, it's a fantastic beer. That's probably the thing I miss most about Mississippi. He sent me a picture of – he was drinking somewhere in Starkville last night, and they had those at the at whatever bar he was at. And that may be one of the things I miss most about Mississippi. I can't find them out here. That's probably my second favorite beer, to be honest. I love Bad Tree. And Tiny Bomb, Wiseacre. I also can't take credit for that. Richard Cross showed me those at the SEC baseball tournament in 2019, and I've kind of been hooked ever since. Wiseacre's got a couple of good ones. Tiny Bomb's my favorite. You had any of those?
Yeah, I had. And the Terrapin just came out with a watermelon, kind of a summer brew. It's like a watermelon IPA. It was actually really good.
Ooh, that sounds awesome. And kind of last thing, I'll offer one more suggestion on that thought. Everyone obviously probably particularly listening to this podcast, unless you live way off, knows Abita. I like drinking the Abita strawberries in the summer. I'm not the biggest fruit beer guy, but they've somehow found a way to make that taste like beer enough to where you can't, like, obviously it has a strawberry taste to it, but it's not like the fizzy, like this is a seltzer almost in a bottle with a beer label type of thing. It tastes like actual beer. The other one I'll add to that is they don't sell these in normal draft bottles, like draft bottles, normal size bottles and cans. You can't go buy a six pack of these, at least nowhere around Mississippi. The Straw Gator. So Abita combined their strawberry beer and their Andy Gator beer. And they sell them actually if the Jackson Beer Store is still open. I want to say that closed down due to COVID, unfortunately, on Jackson Avenue. They sell them in like wine bottles almost looking things. And it's called Straw Gator. And it's the, if you're an Abita fan, it's the combo between the strawberry and the Andy Gator. And it is delightful.
Oh, yeah. And then I think Scheinerbach does some really good that grapefruit summertime.
Yeah.
I think that's solid.
That is that's another good one. Oh, we could probably have, I might have to go track down old John the Beer Snob and us have like a three-way beer podcast. That might be interesting. And we got a long summer ahead of us. I don't know. I need to go find that guy. He was a really interesting dude to talk to. So
anybody that makes their own beers are usually a pretty interesting cat.
That is that's very true. And, you know, if you're making something like that and you've tasted something like that, you've got to be able to articulate it pretty well. So that's actually, I'm going to file that away in the list of great ideas we come up with on this show. Let's see. Flip the burger back. We're going back to baseball. How realistically expensive is Dan McDonald, assuming Mike Bianco leaves? So if we're assuming the caveat if Mike Bianco does leave, I don't think money is an issue with Dan McDonald. It's more of he's kind of put feelers out there. He's kind of messaged out there through the years that if Mike Bianco were to get fired, he wouldn't necessarily want to be the one to replace Mike Bianco after his, you know, now two-decade time at Ole Miss, without of respect to someone he considers a friend and a close ally in the industry, if you want to put it that way. But again, if Mike is not the coach in Ole Miss in 2022, it's not because he got fired. And so I do think from everything I've heard and read and, you know, some of the few people I still talk to, I think that would absolutely change things with Dan. And to get to your question, I don't think money would be an issue with Dan, particularly he's had an AD change since he's hired, meaning that the guy that hired Dan McDonald is no longer the AD at Louisville. And kind of reading the tea leaves on some things, I am not sure that guy has the same approach of, hi, here's a bunch of money, just go make us successful in this sport. I think it's more of a, hey, how can we make more money at this sport while still winning and perhaps maybe not pay you an astronomical amount type of thing? That's not reporting. That's just slightly speculation, piecing some things together. So I think Dan McDonald's a realistic possibility if Mike Bianco were to move on to something else. And I also don't think money would necessarily be a thing. Now, would you have to throw, you know, seven figures to kind of get his attention? Sure, but I don't think you have to offer him – I would say not. I don't think you have to offer him more than what Mike Bianco makes right now. Maybe I'm wrong in that and off base. Again, I'm not a reporter anymore, but I feel pretty comfortable saying that money's not an issue there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my thing is, you know, why would Dan McDonald leave? You know, he really doesn't have to. I mean, not saying that the I was about to say Conference USA, but it's called American, right?
They're in Conference USA for a year, though, actually, when he took over. That's how long ago he took over. They won the CUSA and then went to the AAC, the ACC, if I'm not mistaken. So
they're in the ACC now?
Yes.
I was confused. I thought they were in the American Conference with East Carolina. So, yeah, I mean, the ACC is a pretty tough conference for baseball, and it's kind of down the last couple of years, but – you know, my thing is nobody wants to replace anybody that's been there for 20 some odd years and expect them to go to Omaha the first year, the second year. So I don't think money is an option. You know, Ole Miss is one of like, I think four or five baseball programs that actually makes money and pays for itself. So that's a, you know, a feather to have in the cap for Ole Miss baseball program, because, you know, a lot of baseball teams don't, you know, I don't think LSU's on that list of, you know, pays for itself. So, man, I'm not sitting here saying that whoever replaces Bianco is going to go to Omaha the first 2 years, but it just is what it is. But of course, everybody's going to have their favorites, like a Dan McDonald or a Cliff Godwin, or you know, somebody that has recently had ties to the Ole Miss staff. But you know, I feel like it should be a hire, like almost kind of like with the Kiffin situation. Like, think outside that doesn't have Ole Miss ties, that just is a really good ball coach. That's kind of like my angle on replacement of a coach.
I think they got to get it right. And I think if Mike Bianco does leave, the list is two people long, and then maybe becomes like 10 if they don't get the two people. And that two people is Dan McDonald and Cliff Godwin. And, you know, another part of this is if Mike Bianco is gone, and what I'm trying to get at is if the replacement is successful, that's also a credit to the stability that Mike Bianco has kind of left behind. If a guy can walk in there into that situation and immediately have success, I think Mike Bianco deserves some credit for that. People probably will be slow to give him some. But, like, if the guy, whoever comes in and gets to Omaha twice in 4 years after he's gone, he didn't exactly have to build that thing from the ground up. So whatever happens, if Mike Bianco does leave this year, I don't know. I may get into some thoughts of that at the top. I hadn't really decided. So you may have already heard this by the time you're listening to this. I'm just saying, if he does leave and the next guy is successful, I do think he should probably deserve some credit for that, because you know, stability is not the knock on Mike Bianco. It's the lack of a peak, I guess, or the ceiling, or reaching a ceiling that's not high enough. Stability, that man's teams never suck. Never.
Yeah, and we're competitive every year, regardless of how many people we lost to the draft or how many people we lost to graduation. We're competitive every year. So that, you know, that speaks a lot, you know, to how Mike, you know, has the program. You know, you look at the Tennessee situation, like, that guy didn't Vito? What's Tennessee's coach's name?
Tony Vitello.
Yeah. So, like, he didn't inherit a program that was just, you know, booming with confidence and that sort of thing. So, it took him a couple years to get that going. So, but if anybody takes over the Ole Miss job, they'll literally be over the moon, because you've got some of the best facilities. You've got 10,000 fans coming to every single game. You can take your pick on whoever you want as far as recruiting wise. So I think the Ole Miss, to compare it to a football program, it's almost kind of like inheriting the Alabama job. You know, it's stable, but you know, you get really good athletes, you get really good facilities. So why not, you know, take a shot on it?
Absolutely. We have one more mailbag question, I think. I want to make sure I got through my text messages as well. Say Bianco does go to LSU. I love that all these questions are the caveat that he's already gone. That's okay. We don't have to get to the flip side of that today. I've written about that a lot in the newsletter. But this last mailbag question we have, say Bianco is gone, would that possibly make that Taiwan Malone kid transfer, since part of the reason he chose Ole Miss was because he wanted to play baseball too? No, absolutely not. I mean, it's an interesting thought, and it's not a bad question, but in the famous words of Sinquest Golson, football pays the bills, man. And so,
yeah, I mean, that is true. I mean, you know, the thing about the two-sport athletes and stuff like that is, you know, you come and play for the school, and whenever it doesn't work out, you go in the transfer portal. I think the transfer portal is going to be, I don't know, something serious to handle, because, you know, whenever – I mean, this is just my opinion on it, and, of course, my opinion doesn't matter because, you know, I cut meat for a living. But with that being said, you know, when you commit to a school and you get to campus and, you know, you're not going to get the playing time that you thought you were going to get the first year or the second year, I mean, you need to challenge yourself. You need to challenge yourself as a teammate, as a player, and you need to challenge yourself to become a better player and a better teammate. Not just take the easy way out and be like, oh, I'll just get in the transfer portal and just go somewhere else. They'll give me some more playing time. You know, that's just what I think's what's wrong with the transfer portal. You know, you just, instead of grinding and, you know, becoming a better player and a better teammate to help out your team, you just, you know, quit on your team and just go, you know, in the transfer portal and just go somewhere else where they, you think that you're wanted. I just think the transfer portal is a tough situation to deal with.
Probably an example of what you're talking about, too, in terms of the good side of it, is Tim Elko, because Tim Elko battled for the third base job his freshman year and got beat out. But he got beat out by a man named Tyler Kenyon. He was that kid ended up being okay. He was just fine. Freshman.
Yeah, but if you look at Tim Elko, and, you know, he, you know, became a better teammate off the field and on the field, you know, and he didn't, you know, not doubt himself and not think that he wasn't good enough to play for Ole Miss. So, you know, and then he reaps the rewards, you know, this year, and, you know, was I would say Elko was a top five player, you know, with one ACL, you know. That's pretty solid, thing to say about him.
Yeah, and that kid could have gone anywhere else and played immediately. Like, he was an uberly talented kid coming out of high school, highly rated recruit, and he just gets beat out by someone else. And, you know, I guess adding on to your point about the transfer portal, instead of, you know, transferring and going and playing immediately, he kind of grinded out for a year. Or I guess that was really 2 years, and then kind of had his due. And it sucks that he didn't get the full-fledged experience with the whole COVID thing and then the knee. And hopefully – I don't know if he comes back next year. There's more time for us to discuss that at a later date. But if he does come back next year, please wrap that kid in bubble wrap. I would like to see him play 56 games just to see the kid get the full collegiate season experience. But anyway, I think that was all the mailbag questions we had. So – before I let you get out of here, the floor is yours. What's happening in the horse racing world? I know the Belmont's over. You had the Baffert. There's some other news with Bob Baffert. Just brief us on your escapades and then the horse industry as a whole.
Yeah, I've got Jenna's Little Angus running in a stakes race next Tuesday. It's her first time to get on the turf, and we'll see how she goes. I've got Big Bobby. We're pointing at an allowance race at Belmont before the Saratoga starts. So, yeah, man, you know, the horse is always going to run around in a circle. And, you know, the Bob Baffert thing is kind of funny, you know, but it is what it is, you know. And but, yeah, just the horses are always going to run around in the circle. I know that Oaklawn in Hot Springs just announced an extra couple of months to be open, so Oaklawn is officially open December 3rd instead of January 22nd. So it looks like it's going to be a Christmas in Hot Springs for me.
Hell yeah, I love Hot Springs. MC's parents have a place there on Lake Hamilton. I've never done that. Yeah. I've been a couple of times, but I've never gone when like the horse racing's happening. So that's probably next up on my bucket list.
We'll have to tag team a weekend up there and go check out the track and put some money on some roulette tables.
I was about to say this would be a good live podcast, but you probably would not. No one would want to have a microphone on us while that's going on. But maybe a
maybe like a live feed from the race. You know, it's funny. The last time I went to Hot Springs for a race, I met some Mississippi State fans up there, and it was a good time. You know, they didn't have a clue what was going on and how to, you know, bet horses and that sort of thing, which I don't have a clue, really. I just kind of follow the trainer and jockey and kind of go with that combo. But yeah, it was a good time. And, you know, it's fun to, you know, to get a group of guys together, rent out a house at Lake Hamilton and, you know, run the horse track for the weekend and maybe rent out a pontoon boat and get on the boat. But Hot Springs is a good time, man.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at, is like, I don't know if live podcast would be the way to go, but I could follow you around for a weekend at Oaklawn. You could explain horse racing to me like a four, and then I just write about what if I learned anything at all. Thoughts?
Yeah. Oh yeah, we can do that for sure. I mean, you'll definitely learn a lot with the what I usually do at Oaklawn, which a lot of people do, is they bet the show ticket. So the show ticket is the third place ticket. So they pay double on show tickets at Oaklawn. So if you take a long shot to finish third, which I did, I think he ended up going off at 55-1, and he finished third place for me. And I got on a $10 ticket, I got $93. So you've got $93 to bet, you know, $10 on your next, you know, you can bet two, but it's just kind of a carryover thing that you keep on playing the show ticket. So it's a good time, man. And we'll get something together, but yeah, bring some meats and hang out and smoke some meats and go hang out on Lake Hamilton for a weekend and go watch some horses. And there's a really good Italian restaurant I can take you to. So yeah, we need to get together on that.
Always smoke the meats. Print the shirts now. He is Greg, the Meat Sharp Jones. As always, I appreciate you lending me a helping hand on this Mailbag Friday. It was good catching up, as always. You'll be back on soon. I appreciate it, dude. Have a good one.
Yeah, as always, I always enjoy getting on the podcast, and we always have a lot of good feedback from our customers that come in and say, man, that Rippy guy is really good. And I was like, well, hey, you know, I'm on there too. You know, like
my mom coming in there and saying that doesn't count.
No, it's fun and always have a good time. And hopefully I can survive the Clarksdale Six Man this weekend and get back on the pod next week with you.
Absolutely. Hit them straight. And football pick season will be around the corner before you know it. So looking forward to that. We'll have Greg back on here soon. Everybody have a safe and happy weekend. Thank you for listening to the podcast as always, and we'll catch you on Monday.